Hello, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, continuing my series of Meet the Candidate interviews. And joining me on the phone today is candidate for Minnesota Senate District 5, Rita Albright. How's it going today, Rita?
Good morning. Well, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and we're kind of winding down the warm days of August and looking forward to some more fallish weather, I think, coming up.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. I can kind of sense snow on the horizon. Hopefully it's far off.
I hope that too.
So as I know, many people are aware or know you as Bemidji's mayor, but how long have you lived in the Bemidji area?
I moved to Bemidji in 1976, actually, to go to Bemidji State University, and like lots of other students there, I stayed. But Bemidji's really been kind of my regional center growing up. I grew up in Big Falls and went to school at Little Fork, and we had a family cabin on Cabacona Lake where I spent most of my summer days growing up. And so Bemidji's always been sort of a second home to me, even as a child.
Right, and you've been Bemidji's mayor for quite some time now.
Yeah, I'm just finishing up my fourth term as Bemidji mayor in my eighth year.
Okay.
The mayor of Bemidji.
All right, and you represented Ward 4 for a little bit too, didn't you?
Right. I was first elected to council in 2010 as the Ward 4 representative, and then midterm of that council term, I ran for mayor.
Okay. All right. So, what other roles in the community have you served prior to your local government experience?
Well, I've been a pretty active volunteer in the community, so, you know, gee, if I look back on all of the ways that I've volunteered, there's a lot of them, but, you know, anything from the Community Ed Council to past president of United Way and also on Peacemaker Resources, other, you know, nonprofit boards, including currently I'm on the Northern Dental Access Center, but I've also been on the, you know, prior to being elected office, I was on the Charter Commission and the Planning Commission. So a variety of things, plus my husband and I have been involved in our church where we've been members since 1980 and worked as a trustee and on the staff parish relations. So it's a broad variety of volunteer work that I've done here locally. And then statewide, I've also been on the Board of League of Minnesota Cities and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. But one of the things I'm most proud of is the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. I was appointed to that by Governor Dayton and served 8 years on that commission. And that's the commission that helps to grant out or make advice to the legislature to grant out Parks and Trails legacy dollars in Greater Minnesota. And then finally, I was appointed to the Governor's Workforce Development Board, and I served in that role for 4 years for the regional person in this area.
All right. Quite the resume there, Rita.
Well, that's my volunteer experience.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've also worked in the community, and Mike and I owned a business in community here for 11 years, the A&W Restaurant, and then, of course, I've worked here locally as in my career in planning as the assistant planner at the city. I was a regional planner for HRDC, and then I also worked for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and the Department of Natural Resources as regional planner. And then finally, I retired last year as the regional director at Northwest Minnesota for the Department of Natural Resources.
All right. So what do you hope to bring to the table if elected in St. Paul?
Well, as I'm talking to folks out here in the community and across the district, a lot of them are concerned about you know, kind of the gridlock and dysfunction that we're seeing down at the Capitol. And so I'm hoping to bring some of the experience that I've had, not only owning a small business and being a manager at a state agency, but also as an elected official, you have to try and find a way to find a solution and move forward. So, you know, as mayor, we often have the decision between two bad choices. And so, you know, that's one thing. You have to make difficult decisions. That's what I've done. You often have shared goals that you can find, even though you're on separate sides of an issue. There's often a place in the middle that you can agree on some things, and that's kind of where I want to be, is working in the middle and finding compromise and being willing to, you know, just roll up your sleeves and listen to folks and try and find those commonalities so that we can move forward. Because, you know, on Monday nights when we meet at council, we actually have to deliver. We have to go through our agenda. We have to make decisions, and we have to, I always say, turn the page and move on and try and move community forward. So that's the kind of leader that I'd be as a state senator.
Was there a particular moment over the past few years that really inspired you or prompted you to join the race?
I had been asked to run for Senate for the last 5 years, and since 2016 when Democrats lost that seat. But I was happy being mayor. I was happy in my professional career, so I wasn't interested in that. And so it wasn't until after I retired last year in July that I actually started to think more seriously about it. And I feel like I have the time, energy, experience, the background. I'm dedicated to our communities here in northern Minnesota. And I have, I think, that experience to really do good work for and make a difference in Senate District 5.
All right. My next question is, what are some of the key issues your potential constituents have discussed with you?
Well, of course, right now, because for a number of reasons, jobs and the economy are always at the top of the list for folks, whether that's a business that's you know, having to have been closed or only open partially, or manufacturing that's had a downturn because of the downturn in the economy, or working people who have lost their jobs or their hours are cut. And so getting our Main Street back on our feet is really one of the priorities, I think, that we need to have in St. Paul. But also, I mentioned before, just that dysfunction and gridlock and inability or unwillingness to compromise and really politicizing everything. People are really tired of the partisan rhetoric, and what they want is just folks to have honest conversations and find solutions and get things done. I've heard from a lot of educators, whether that's teachers or paraprofessionals or superintendents, that we need to look seriously at our school funding to make sure that the schools across Senate District 5 in northern Minnesota are being funded equitably. I know that there are several schools that have operating referenda, and I know the Bemidji schools are looking at that this fall. And that's because the state just is not equitably funding schools so that they have the resources they need to do a good job with our kids. Because I think, you know, at the end of the day, no matter what we look like, where we live, or, you know, what our community is like, our public schools, we want to make sure that they're inspiring imagination, they're cultivating critical thinking, and that, you know, our kids are getting the education to make them very successful. And so we need to really support our public schools. As you know, our public schools are what really keep our communities connected, and that's never more apparent when we've had them do distance learning, and parents and teachers are anxious to get back to school, and the challenges of COVID are you know, looming. But they really do serve as sites to distribute supplies and provide meals and keep our families informed. So it's important that we support our public schools. And I think by joining together, we can make sure that our communities are strong and schools have the resources they need to really serve our students well. So, finally, I would say that people, working people are telling me that it can be difficult to sustain their families and to thrive because they might not have jobs that pay enough, really, to sustain their families. And so they're working two and three jobs. They're trying hard to be successful, but it's challenging to be able to pay for safe housing and finding access to childcare. And then finally, small business owners and individuals are telling me that affordable health care is difficult. Business owners are challenged because healthcare costs are rising. So finding a way to make sure that we have affordable healthcare and access to healthcare and that people's healthcare needs are met so that folks don't have to worry about, you know, going into bankruptcy or not taking care of themselves because they don't have access.
All right. That's quite a list. You've been talking to a lot of folks, it sounds like.
You know, there are probably a dozen things. I've been keeping track, and there are a dozen things that people are asking questions about, and I have help with volunteers are helping to make calls to voters, too, and so I'm sharing information with them, too, so they know that, you know, here's how Rita feels about these particular issues. But, yeah, there's a list of at least a dozen or more issues that people are bringing up.
Yeah, and what the state handles is so broad and so diverse, too. It's hard to condense it all into one interview, I know. But my next question is a bit philosophical and very open-ended, so bear with me. But what sort of values do you have that guide you in your decision-making?
You know, I was lucky to grow up in a home with a working mom and dad that cared for us a lot, and we had, you know, my dad came out of the service and went to school in the GI Bill and graduate of Bemidji State University, and he was an elementary teacher and then elementary principal. My mom was the first one in her family of nine kids to graduate from high school. So we came from poor means, but the fact that my dad had an education brought us into the middle class, and that's part of why I say I was lucky as a child growing up to have a family that cared for me and taught me values like honesty and respect. And I had three siblings, so compromise,
yeah,
relationships, that kind of thing. And I think, you know, that's what people in Minnesota are looking for, that we see a shared purpose across our state and that we are interdependent. And I think that's even more apparent now that we've been faced with this COVID coronavirus, that when we're all in for all of us, we can really create a state that everyone needs to thrive. So, you know, unfortunately right now there's some politicians that would rather fuel division among us and divide us. But I think instead of fueling division, I'd really like to inspire people who might be confused or fearful about the future, that we can make Minnesota a place where there's fairness and freedom and prosperity for all of us, so without exception. And that means everyone across Senate District 5 and the entire state.
So my next question is on the COVID-19 response. What do you think the state did well, and what would you have done differently?
Well, when we're faced with a pandemic from like this, I think now is really the time for us to unite across our differences and make policy choices that help everyday people. So, you know, as individuals, we can wash our hands, we can avoid unnecessary travel and check in on our friends and neighbors. And I think as a united people, we need to demand that our local, state, and national governments do everything possible to protect everyone's health without exception. And we get through this together. Our own health depends on the health of the person next to us and the person next to them. So I think that it's important that people follow the health guidelines. I think it's important that we practice all of the safety measures and follow the mask order so that we are protecting our most vulnerable, because that's what makes us stronger. Whether that's people with chronic health conditions or could be people without shelter or neighbors, people living in detention or those that are on the front lines of providing vital services. And maybe some people can't afford to stay home, and so making sure that we can all access the care we need is important. So I think we have to just work together. You know, people want to keep businesses open. We want to have schools open. And that's why we all have to be in this together.
All right. My last question is one that's very near and dear to me. Child care is becoming incredibly difficult to find in this area, especially for infants. And the child care issue is being exacerbated in light of COVID-19. What are your ideas on how to address access to child care?
Well, that's a great question. And in fact, my daughter-in-law, my son's wife, he and she have an in-home licensed daycare. They don't live here in Bemidji area. They live just outside of Moorhead. And they found themselves in the same place that many families do, and their daycare closed or it didn't. Their daycare closed. I know some people just can't find a slot to put kids in, but their daycare was closing, and they have one child whose health is compromised because she's on heart medication, and they didn't, in their small little town, they didn't have another option, and so she said, you know, let's remodel the house, let's take out a small business loan, remodel the house so that we can afford to take in other kids and I can stay home from my job and have a licensed daycare. And that's what they've done. And so their experience is informing me a bit about the process for them to get licensed, some of the roadblocks that they found, and then you know, some of the challenges with actually operating a daycare, and so I feel pretty well informed on that. I'm not sure I have solutions to that, but I do think that we can do better as a state to, for example, you know, the state support for child care assistance doesn't always cover the cost that the child care provider has, and so, you know, are there ways that we can do better there? Are there ways that we can make it more convenient for child care providers to apply and to make reports? And then are there ways that we can engage our employers in helping us figure out how do we provide child care so that we, you know, we have a workforce shortage, so how do we get workers back to work? And make sure that our businesses have the workers they need, and that families can be secure in the knowledge that their child is in a safe place, they're being cared for well, and they are feeling, you know, comfortable being able to go back to work. Because I think right now we want to try and remove barriers, whether that's removing barriers for making child care accessible or removing barriers for people to find child care so they can work and do the things that they need to do. That's kind of where I'm going to be looking for solutions. And then finally, I think that our educational system can play a role with, you know, early childhood education. Preschool education is just essential for making sure that our young people moving through schools are getting the best start that they can. And it's very well proven that those kids that we catch early with, you know, play-based learning at those early ages, those are the kids that are going to be the most successful going forward. And as we think about trying to graduate, you know, I'm off of childcare here, but it's all kind of connected in my mind. But as we think about, you know, making sure that we have 100% graduation rate, for example, and, you know, for all of our students, no matter where they're from or what they look like, we want to make sure that they get a great, healthy start at the beginning. So let's go upstream. Let's not focus on the seniors. Let's focus on the preschoolers so that we are really trying to go upstream in this whole continuum of education and making sure that we're starting a good start. And so I think so preschool education is another place that our child care solution is going to come from.
Well, fantastic. Well, that's all the questions I have today, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, Mayor Rita. It's Rita Albright for Senate District 5.